Brunn woke abruptly, with the feeling that something was very wrong. They were in freefall. But they had been on in-system drive with the artificial gravity on. The pilot was awake and changing switch positions on the main board. Brunn looked at Hazel, who was also awake, hanging upside down above the bench where she'd slept. She reached back, tapped her arm, and nodded toward the pilot.
What are we doing?
End of the line, girlies. I've been talking to them over there.
He gestured, and Brunn looked out to see a dark shape against the starfield. What it really was, or how far away, she couldn't tell, but she could see the ovoid shape of a warship.
Fleet?
I get more from them for turning you in than from you for taking you on. An abomination is one thing. I didn't bargain on a runaway from Ranger Bowie's house.
Not Fleet.
Brunn's stomach tightened. The pilot smirked at them and opened his mouth to speak into the headset. Brunn uncoiled from her seat, twisting in midair, and slammed both booted feet into the side of his head. Hazel pushed off the overhead to get her forearm around the man's neck and hold it against the tall seat back, while Brunn untangled herself from the cords and wires her attack had landed her in.
What do I do if he gets a...
The man jerked against her arm and then grabbed her arm and tried to free himself. But he was strapped in, and Brunn already had her knife out and a firm hold on the back of his seat for leverage. She jammed the knife under his ribs and up, just as she had been told. He twisted, struggling for a moment longer, then slumped. That long, elephant-skinning knife had the length to reach his heart. Brunn stared at Hazel, who was white with shock. But they had no time for shock. Catching her feet under the co-pilot's seat, she unhooked the pilot's harness and started pulling his body out of the seat, pushing it to the back. Drops of blood followed it, floating, dispersing.
Can you pilot?
Brunn grinned and nodded, then clambered into the seat. Hazel climbed over the pilot, still twitching a little but beyond help, and made it into the co-pilot's seat, strapping herself in quickly.
In-system drive. Where is the in-system drive?
And she didn't want to run them right into that warship. She gestured to Hazel. Rotate us. Point us that way. Parallel to the warship's axis, toward what she hoped was its stern. Hazel touched the controls, and the stars wheeled crazily. Brunn ignored that, and her ears, and found the inset black square that should be the in-system drive startup. She pushed it. Nothing happened.
What else? Oh, yes. Safety release.
She tried again, in sequence.
Release. Startup. Drive on.
The sudden apparent lurch of the dust in the cockpit told her they were under drive again.
Now for the AG. Down there. 1/10.
And the dust settled, leaving the cockpit clearer. Behind her, the pilot's body fell to the deck. A little red globule slid past her gaze and attached itself to her shirt. Blood. The pilot's blood. And she'd never thought about what would happen if she cut his throat in zero G. They could be drowning in the stuff, unable to see any of the controls. Maybe her luck was back, but she wouldn't count on it. She notched up the in-system drive. If she had the pilot figured right, he was a smuggler or something, and his personal shuttle would be overpowered, up to and maybe beyond the structural limits of the craft. She found the accelerometer and the V-scale, but the blasted thing was in MPH, whatever that was, rather than meters per second. Still, it was fast, and going faster. Hazel touched her arm. She had found the scan controls. Two screens came up, system-wide and local.
Local's the problem.
The warship behind them was lighted up like a Christmas tree with active weapons scans. But according to Esme, anything as small as a shuttle was hard to hit, if it was far enough away. Well, the answer to that was to get far enough away, and that meant speed. She notched the drive up again. The little craft still felt stable as a rock. Corey's had gone faster. She notched it up again and again. Hazel tapped her arm. On the system scan, several ships were flagged with weapons markers, and behind, the warship had swapped ends and was in pursuit. It had always been a small chance. She'd known that. Better to die out here than back there. She hoped Hazel felt that way. She cocked her head at the girl.
It'll be close, but I like it.
Well, close or not, that's the right attitude.
Brunn pointed at the drive controls and mimed shoving it to the line. Hazel looked at the scan and nodded.
What the hell? It can't be worse.
Brunn rammed the control all the way to the end of the slot. The shuttle vibrated down its length. And behind them on the scan, an explosion marred the pattern.
If I hadn't accelerated...
We could jump, couldn't we? These shuttles are jump capable.
We could jump, but where?
Supposedly, there was a fleet ship in system waiting to pick them up, if she could find it. Another explosion. The little ship shivered as fragments impacted its minimal shields. Hazel pointed.
Another one!
Bruin glanced at the scan and saw another weapons-lighted warship. They weren't going to make it through this. She might as well jump and sort it out later if she could. She found the jump controls and started the checklist. Never leave out the checks, Oblo had told her, because you can get killed just as dead by a malfunction as by an enemy. Her hands raced over the controls, but she left nothing out. When she was ready, she tapped Hazel on the shoulder and pointed to the jump initiation control. Hazel nodded, and Brun pushed it. Nothing happened. Brun pushed it again. Some of these controls stiffened if not used regularly. Hazel nudged Brun and pointed.
It's asking for a validation code!
On a side panel, a small display had lit, and the words, Voice Recognition Validation Required Prior to Jump Insertion. The one thing they couldn't do was produce an approximation of the pilot's voice, and whatever code words he'd used. She slammed her fist once more against the useless button and turned her attention to what they could do. The system was woefully short of useful pieces of rock, at least near the planet. No moons to land on. She would have given a lot for a moonlet with caves to hide in. So, make use of the terrain you've got, her instructors had said. No terrain in space, though. If she could get back to the planet, they could hide out in the wilderness, or they could be recaptured as they tried to land. That was worse than death. She'd dive this thing into the ground before she let that happen. She glanced at Hazel. The girl was pale-faced, but calm, waiting for Brun to do something.
Terrain.
It all came back to escape and evasion. And in space, that meant outrun or hide out. They couldn't outrun the warships, and there wasn't any place to hide.
Except, what if we went straight for the Elias Madero, docked at the space station? Could we get inside? Hide in it?
It would take a long time to find them, time in which fleet might be coming. Or might not. She looked around the cockpit. Somewhere, the pilot must have had local space charts. They had not run into any of the things which must be up here, the various satellites and stations. She didn't spot charts, but she did spot a noteboard. She scribbled local charts on it and handed it to Hazel.
We're not going back, are we?
Not exactly. Hide.
Hazel seemed to understand the mouthed words and nodded. Backed off from its maximum velocity, the little ship could maneuver surprisingly well. Brun kept an eye on the scans as she jinked back and forth, counting to herself in a random sequence she'd once memorized for the pleasure of it. Her other eye was on the fuel gauge. Rapid maneuvering ate up fuel at an alarming rate.
Local nav charts up on the screen.
Brun spared a glance. Little satellites, big satellites, space stations. She hadn't realized this place had more than one station, and a large number of uncategorized items. Most were drifting in a more or less equatorial orbit, though a few were in polar orbits. In size, these ranged from bits as small as pencils to stations a kilometer across. She needed something big enough. An orbital station would be perfect, but of course there wouldn't be one. Hazel leaned past her and tapped something. Brun glanced again. Something long and skinny, much bigger than the shuttle, and marked on the chart with a large red X.
Well, whatever it is, it will have to do.
Brun nodded at Hazel and pointed to the nav computer. She couldn't figure a course to it in her head, not in dodge hostile fire. In a moment or two, the course came up on the nav screen, along with an estimate to fuel consumption. Very close. You'd have to spend fuel to dump V, and spiral around the planet on a much longer approach than Brun really wanted, with ships shooting at her. And if she was really lucky, maybe the two enemy ships would run into each other and remove that problem. Minute by minute, as the shuttle curved back toward the planet, Brun expected the bright flash that would be the last thing she ever saw. Behind, to either side, but none of them as close as they had been.
The boost out took hours. How long will it take to get back using all the power I can? How much of the outbound trip was unpowered? How long did I sleep before waking to zero G?
Brun didn't know. She didn't have time to think about it, only time to watch the scans and the nav screen and do what she could to conserve their fuel.
One's out!
Brun nodded. One of their pursuers had miscalculated a boost and was now out of sight behind the planet. The other, farther away, was probably out of missile range. At least, nothing had blown up anywhere near them for some time. The other red-marked icons she could see were farther away, and didn't appear to be chasing her. Yet. She could have used Kutsudis' enhanced scan. She didn't even know what size those things were. Even ordinary fleet scan would have told her that, and located any fleet ships in system as well.
We might actually make it.
She glanced at the fuel gauge again. Enough to decelerate to match their target. And that small margin which would give her a chance to try a last wild gamble. She linked the autopilot to the nav computer for the approach, trusting the universe enough to take this moment to stretch before trying to dock to an uninhabited derelict.